Welcome, everyone. My name is Jennifer Petrie. This is episode 2 of Hernia U Podcast. Today, you will be hearing from Dr. Tolens. I hope you enjoy his story. Stay tuned and more to come.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to our Why You Do What You Do podcast. We are here currently in Miami, Florida for the joint society meeting of the America's Hernia Society as well as the European Hernia Society. I have the honor here this afternoon to be sitting with Dr. Tim Tolens. Dr. Tim Tolens, last year, 2017, you performed over 1,600 cases in your hometown and hospital in Bohuiden, Belgium. But at the same time, you performed over 500 cases last year in over 10 different countries. So I ask you, how and why do you do what you do?
Well, thank you, Jay, for having me here and for being here in Miami. Beautiful time, beautiful weather. Yes, 2017 was a top year, and I was indeed very active, as well in my unit as well as abroad. You know that my hospital is kind of like a privatized place, so the more we do, the more effective we are, the better it will be for the unit, for myself, for everybody. So this is completely driven by ourselves. And hernia was given to me in 2003, and we had 80 cases, 8-0. And this has been growing every year. And last year, just the inguinal hernia surgery was more than 900 cases, just that in my unit. Knowing that I combine hernia with colorectal, and colorectal has been a steady 250 cases a year, you easily get to these numbers. And certainly, if you know that we work in private and we want to optimize as much as we can. So it is a busy life in the private practice anyway. That on one side. The other thing is that traveling abroad over the last 15 years, and definitely since 2006, I intensified on that, and I highly commuted traveling in the Middle East and in the EMEA region. I have built some relationships over all these years, which allowed me to establish personal relationships with a lot of surgeons. And that has led to 3-4 hospitals in the Middle East, which I visit every month. And that means that every second weekend, I will fly on a Friday evening and arrive around midnight in any destination in the Middle East. And I'll be working and operating every Saturday, Sunday, and Monday with the local team. This has been well prepared, and this is kind of like a routine, and it returns every month, every 6 weeks, back into the same routine. And we've been able to increase on that program. And whereas in the beginning, I would be operating every single case myself, knowing me after all these years, the local teams start to prepare the patients, start to operate themselves. And so I can basically hop from one theater to the other one. And now we operate almost standard in two theaters at the same time. So yes, there is a very big drive with all of my friends, and I'm thinking about different countries in the Middle East where I'm very active. I'm very active in the Emirates, very active in Kuwait, in Saudi. So that keeps us achieving these things. And I just love to do that.
Very interesting. I also know that you speak 5 different languages. Is that from your surgery experience, that kind of how and why did that, where did that come from?
Well, I was born to a family that at that time was living abroad in Central Africa, in at that time called Zaire, but now called Democratic Republic of Congo, where I grew up for the first 6 years. My parents lived there for 14 years, and ever since that, we've been traveling all over. We've been living a couple of years in the United States. I lived in Michigan. My dad did a PhD at MSU. Then we went to Luxembourg for the European Communion. After that, during training, I went to South Africa, where I stayed for about 2 years. So all over, in all these years, traveling was in the genes. And It was the obvious normal thing for me to do that. So having had two Belgian parents speaking Flemish and French altogether, and French is a national language in France, but also in Zaire, in Congo. These are the normal languages for me to speak. English, I learned with all my traveling at school, but with all my traveling, and I think I can even better present in English than I can present in Flemish or in my own language. Then the fourth language is German. It's one of our national languages. It helps if you have if you had a girlfriend from Köln. So I used to date for 2 years a girlfriend in Köln, which made me learn the language very quickly and easily. Und ich spreche es noch immer sehr gut. So that's why I learned German. Then I stayed for 2 years in South Africa, and I learned the language very close to the Belgian language. You could compare it as a slang, but an old slang. Dialect of Flemish, which is the South African language. And then now in recent years, in the last 10 years, I've traveled so much to the Middle East that I will not say that I speak fluently Arabic at all, but I know about a couple of hundred words of Arabic, mm-hmm. which help me around. So the languages is a result of all the traveling and of the nomad life I had as a young child, basically. And it's maintained over time with all my traveling.
Within some of these the countries that you go to, I understand that you've operated on members of royal families, dignitaries in some of these regions. Any particular story, unique story that stands out to you regarding this experience?
So, there's a couple of them, of course. Some of them ended in jail, but let's not address them. But I must say that having traveled extensively and repetitively to the Middle East, I got exposed to some more complicated cases. And there are some patients that locally, they are not fond of operating themselves. And one can talk about a judge from the Supreme Court in the Emirates to royal family members in Saudi or Qatar or Bahrain or whatever country in the Middle East. So basically, in most of all of these countries, I've operated what we call VIPs. One particular story, which I will anonymize a little bit, but is a patient that was presented to me at the end of an operation list in a small Gulf country. And I was actually lacking time because I needed to catch my KLM flight back to Europe. And I refused to operate her. And the local head of department, he was a tiny surgeon, and I called him Little Caesar because he was ruling as a Little Caesar. And he said that he would make sure that I was sitting on the plane, and we would start our surgery 2 hours before departure, and it was a ventral hernia repair. So in the end, I knew I was going to miss my plane anyway. I had mentally agreed to it, and we started the surgery. And about one hour and a half later, the case was finished. And of course, I was convinced that I had missed my plane, my KLM flight. And as we walked down out of the hospital, this, let's call him Little Caesar, joins with me. And I see two blinded, armored, white cars with little flags on. And at that stage, I asked him what it was. And when they opened the trunk of these cars, I could see all of my luggage with all my clothes and everything packed. And without me knowing, it seemed that I had operated a princess from a royal family. And so I started to understand why I was maybe not going to miss my plane. So driving up to the airport, instead of going to the classical business check-in, they take me to the first class check-in, where as I walk in, the lady addresses me by my name and says, Dr. Dollins, welcome. You can please have now a shower in the royal suites upstairs and have some quick dinner while the plane is waiting for you. And as you are ready to board, the driver will bring you to the airport, to the aircraft. And so I had my shower while a 747 KLM flight was waiting. And I boarded the plane, and as I boarded the plane, the captain announced on the plane that the last passenger had boarded and that they would leave the country within a couple of minutes. And I wanted to turn to the right to go to the business class lounge, and they referred to me and they said, no, you have to go to the left, seat 1A is waiting for you. And as I go and sit down in seat 1A, which was arranged by the royal family, it seemed that I was sitting next to Boris Becker. And so this is one of the stories. There's many, many good ones. Luckily for me, none bad ones or ones that remain bad for me. But many good memories, yes.
Great story. Thank you for sharing. Many cultures, of course, in these travels and in working in the different countries, what would you say is your favorite thing about different cultures, and maybe at the same time a follow-up question on would be the most challenging situation that you deal with culturally?
The most challenging, that is easy, because when you go to a country, you have to adapt yourself to that country and the habits in that country. And the Arab world, and certainly if you go to the more conservative countries, and I think I may say that, but Saudi is one of them, you see a totally different culture. I'm not saying it's bad, I'm not saying it's better, but you see a very different structure. You have to adapt yourself to that, and that is not always easy. We are used to a certain habit, and that may not be the same for that specific country where you're going to, so you have to adapt yourself, and sometimes you're just not aware of it. Import of chocolates containing alcohol into such a country, you and I would not think about it, but I almost got jailed for it in one of those Arab countries. So that's one of the more spicy stories of my life. But what is appealing to me is that in these countries, the culture, the way of life, the religion, the mix of religion into the culture is so different, so much present, and yet it works. And you see that there is maybe even much more friendship amongst people than we would think. And I disagree with what media is sending out, as the perception often is existing that Middle East is dangerous or not a safe place to go. I think it's much more safe place to go than many other countries, whether we are talking about America or Europe. I think it's one of the safest places in the world, and unfortunately, by media showing only 1% of what is happening, you get the perception that starts to control the reality. I think that the culture in these countries is one of much more what I call camaraderie, friendship. The way they greet one another, they are much more tactile. We are in Europe much more sterile. We don't touch one another more. We don't that much talk anymore. I see it much more isolated in our countries. There, the mind is much more open-minded. It's as being on a market, on a fish market. It's always loud. It's always busy. It's always crowdy. It's always vivid. And somehow, I did always find it very appealing. And in traveling, meeting other cultures, other people, I think is widening your view on life, and I would recommend it to everybody.
Excellent. Dr. Tim Tolens, we thank you very much for taking time today to participate in our podcast series, and most importantly, by clarifying both how and why you do what you do.